across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Friday the 13th. Kind of has that feel to it because it's one of those rare times that I'm not going to tell you that it's another beautiful day up north to have you here from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or the Civic Media app or by podcast or social media. Nope, I'm not going to tell you it's a beautiful day because it is cold. It is rainy. I'm looking at the map right now and it's going to be raining for some time to come. It's just a monster storm system, not a severe storm system. It's not a blizzard system, but I mean, it's just a monster in size, you know, rainmaker that stretches all the way. It's basically all of South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Iowa, Nebraska, Northern Illinois. That's just all covered in green on the radar. And it's just going to sit and spin over us for a good part of the day. So, don't skimp on the rain gear today, and we'll get the full weatherology forecast coming up in just a little bit. Coming up on this Friday, the main story we're going to be talking about is, you know, Dysfunction Junction up in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk about the inability of the people who have majority control of the United States House of Representatives to choose a new speaker. They came all together as a caucus, picked a leading candidate who had a majority of the votes, but not enough to overcome their slim majority in the House. And basically, eight Republicans are gumming up the works and preventing House Republicans from choosing a leader among themselves. We will talk to a Courier Newsroom national correspondent, Kiev Akil, and we'll talk to author and media critic Mark Jacob this morning. We'll also talk about the Republicans in the legislature in Madison passing a series of hateful bills yesterday rather than providing any kind of useful solutions to the things that are going on in our world. And Kia, by the way, will also talk about how at least one person is out there sticking up for us. We'll talk about President Biden going after all those junk fees on our bills from airlines and concerts and everything, you know, credit cards, you name it. Somebody's got to take that on finally. So at least somebody's getting something done. And I'll prattle on for a little bit about being at the Pablo Center in Eau Claire last night to see Mary Chapin Carpenter and Sean Colvin, a very lovely acoustic set that they put on for a lot of very satisfied customers in Eau Claire. And so it made for kind of a light or late night, which might explain why I'm feeling a little bit draggy this morning, Sam Davison. But Sam, you give me reason to be optimistic about the weekend because if nothing else, we have the big doings in Ringgold this weekend. What?
The big event. The biggest thing. It's like the biggest thing to happen in Ringgold all year long. Nothing else happens there. It is the Ringgold Harvest Fest. The 27th annual?
27th annual. It says here annual Ringgold Harvest Day or Harvest Fest. Yeah, it's there will be all kinds of vendors, craft vendors in a barn from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Let's see. Let me look at the flyer here. There's going to be a petting zoo, free admission and parking, rain or shine, which is a good thing because it's going to be rain, a vintage market. It's the antique dealer's best kept secret, it says. Stroll from booth to booth through our small town, just 12 miles east of Wausau, just off Highway 29. What do you do during it?
It's been like 3 or 4 years since I was there for it. It was before COVID, but I just kind of wander around and check out all the booths.
I'm wondering is there a beer tent? Is there music? Or is it mostly just crafts and vendors and things like that?
Might be. I don't know. I guess I didn't pay attention to that because I wasn't 21 last time I went. I'll have to look this time.
Well, I'll tell you what's different this time compared to other events. When I called up the Facebook page for this, The first two photos are of lonely little outhouses. And I scroll down to the post and it says, just a reminder, there are no indoor toilets at our event. Good old country living. Septics just can't do it. However, there are 6 porta potties around for your convenience. Thanks for understanding. So you got that, you know, porta. That's all you need. Well, no, some people could do more. Again, sometimes it's good to be a boy, but hey, forewarned is forearmed. You now know. So, I'm having a little fun with it, but really, when it's in the same vein as, you know, the Cranberry Fest in Warrens, the Cranberry Fest in Stone Lake, so many other things where it is, it's a whole lot of vendors and crafts. There's all kinds of things you can get. Frankly, the farmers markets are that way now, whether you're in Eau Claire or Madison or wherever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some produce and things, but, you know, there's also all kinds of crafts and knickknacks. And it is technically time to start thinking about Christmas shopping. So you might find a few things while you're there.
Yeah, I will need to find some gifts for people, so I might as well take a look.
There you go. I mean, take a look at it. Could be fun. So good. Well, I hope it's a great time. And let's take a break here. And when we come back, we will talk just briefly about the baseball playoffs, the weekend in sports. We'll talk to Dan Schumacher about it again near the end of the show. And then we'll unpack the news a little bit with things happening in Madison and D.C. And along the way, your phone calls are welcome at 844-967-2789. Hey, wherever you're listening, across Wisconsin, across the country, if you care to, over the interwebs and by podcast, when you're here, you're up north. And we'll be back right after this. This is a little Mary Chapin Carpenter to get us going for a Friday morning. Well, it won't get us going yet. Just another second or two. Here we go. She and Sean Colvin played the Pablo Center in Eau Claire. Again, just a treat to have that Performing Arts Center there. Good crowd and a good time, even if it was a little past an early morning show host's bedtime. 6 a.m. temps around Wisconsin. It is 47 degrees up here on Lake Wissota. Madison comes in at 52. Waukesha, you're at 48 degrees. La Crosse, 50. Wausau, 46 degrees. Wisconsin Rapids, 46. Green Bay, 48. Hayward, you're at 45 degrees right now. Coming back to Wausau for just a second, where it's 46 degrees. In Wausau, folks around there, long-timers around there, were saddened, but hopefully affectionately so, at learning about the passing of Mark Zelich, a legend at Channel 7 in Wausau. I mean, he was known as Z, and he was basically the OG for Channel 7. He began his career in 1951 as a disc jockey and doing sports in Escanaba, Michigan. He moved to Ashland and then to Central Wisconsin in 1955, moving to WSAU-TV in 1957 as a sports anchor, eventually becoming news director. He did all manner of special projects. If you go to the WSAW.com page, again, WSAW.com, and if you click on the story, the photos that they roll through of Z, I mean, you feel like you're watching Anchorman all over again with the red blazers and the beige sets, and then some of the old time TV photos that are there from the 50s and 60s. I had the extreme pleasure of working on the WEAU 50th anniversary back in 2003 and got to talk to a couple of the legends there, one of whom passed away, you know, just a few days after our interview, but got to hear all kinds of great stories about working in early TV when, I mean, let's face it, right now in smaller market TV stations, well, frankly, throughout TV, it's kind of a young person's game now. And there's nothing wrong with that. But back then, I mean, you were in your 30s, 40s, 50s to, you know, even get in and get onto TV. And so you see all these guys and then eventually women, you know, having some fun, but working so hard to, I mean, you're You're editing film. You're editing audio tape with razor blades and splicing tape and all of the other things that went into it. And so it's, you know, Z's passing is just a reminder of the people who helped create, you know, the TV newscasts and shows and local programming that we see today. And frankly, need to see more of. We need more community TV. We need to see more local faces, more local names, more local sports. I know we have such a focus on ratings and on eyeballs and on ad revenue, but if I could convey anything to the local TV general managers of the world these days, it's that you're still the hometown TV station. And to get out there and put more of your hometown on the airwaves. So Mark Zelich passing away yesterday at the age of 95. Turning to sports, the Major League Baseball playoffs. Check this out. The National League Championship Series is set, and it's an all-wild card NL Championship Series. None of the division winners advanced. The Philadelphia Phillies eliminated the Atlanta Braves for the second straight year with a 3-1 victory last night in Game 4 of their series. The Phillies will play the Diamondbacks, who first swept the Brewers, who had won the Central Division, and then swept the LA Dodgers, who won the Western Division. Game 1 between Arizona and Atlanta will be between Arizona and the Phillies will be Monday night in Philadelphia. Now over to the American League. That series, the American League Championship Series, will start on Sunday night, and that's a Lone Star State showdown with the Houston Astros taking on the Texas Rangers. Badger football is back tomorrow afternoon. It's a 3 o'clock game against Iowa at Camp Randall Stadium, and that game will be on Fox. And then the top-ranked volleyball team, the women, are 15-0 now, and they have had a week off between matches, and they are back in action tonight at home. They will take on Rutgers at the Fieldhouse coming up at 7 o'clock tonight. All right, let's unpack the news here, where you can call in at 844-967-2789 at any point and share what's on your mind. And I'm going to start in the Wisconsin legislature first, because we'll have plenty of time to talk about the dysfunction of Congress as we go along here. But in the legislature, I'll simply start by noting this. There are real problems out there. Affordable child care, a worker shortage in so many different industries, a record state budget surplus that has not yet been turned into a true middle-class tax cut. These things have been around since the legislature began its session back in January, and they are still languishing. I mean, even a Milwaukee Brewers stadium renovation proposal, which doesn't date back as far, it got some traction in committee yesterday. A plan has been advanced, a proposal to do the renovations. But the things that affect families, the things that affect the state economy, the things that affect the workforce, they're just sitting there collecting dust. What are Republican legislators doing? Well, in just 14 or 15 days, three bills went from introduction to committee hearing to committee vote to being passed out of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Three hateful bills that attack trans youth and the LGBT community at large. These three bills may not even be taken up by the state Senate because they know Governor Tony Evers is going to veto them. They see that, you know, there are other things they could be working on, you know, with their lives. So the Senate may not take it up. There's no path for these bills becoming law. And yet there was plenty of room yesterday for some of the most misinformed and hateful rhetoric. And if I had had more time yesterday, I might have rolled tape on the floor remarks and played back some of the ridiculousness. But then I thought maybe I don't even want to give extra oxygen to the hateful and medically incorrect things that Republicans were saying. There was, for example, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who came down from the rostrum and, you know, spoke passionately about the need for these anti-trans bills. And he spoke at a pre-session news conference, essentially comparing being transgender to a mental illness and suggesting that all of the medical experts who weighed in against these bills, that those medical experts might change their stance in 100 years. He actually said that as these bills came down, which would ban transgender youth obtaining gender-affirming medical care and banning participation on high school and college sports teams. Now, we have had a guest on here previously talking about what is gender-affirming medical care. What is it about the counseling and the medications? But minors do not get surgery on their genitals. But gender-affirming care can take all other manner of things to help somebody cope with their questions about their gender identity, about their sexual identity. And as they become adults, consenting adults, they can make the choices that they make. But to hear Republicans so shamelessly lying about genital mutilation of children and other uncomfortable topics, and I mean really uncomfortable topics that they were saying, with, by the way, school kids up in the gallery, up on a tour of the Capitol, and saying, come on in, kids, and watch your legislature in session. And they're talking about three-year-olds having genital surgery when that doesn't happen. And they brought up no evidence that it does. They kept citing studies out of, you know, Sweden or Norway that have long since been debunked. But that didn't stop people like Speaker Voss, who said, if you go back in history, the way to treat mental illness 50 to 100 years ago was a lobotomy. And at the time, that was settled science. That's just the way it was supposed to be. We can go back to example after example after example, Voss says, where the human mind has been opened to say there are different ways of doing things, and it shouldn't necessarily be a one-size-fits-all solution because we have so-called settled science. Well, there is no one-size-fits-all solution, Robin. It's something that should be a matter between, in this case, a young person, their parent or parents or guardians, and their healthcare providers, and not you. Not you. Not any of your Republican colleagues, not anybody in government should be in that doctor's office or in that counselor's office for those sessions. This is healthcare. This is suicide prevention. This is about fighting depression. And that's just on the gender-affirming healthcare. On the side of sports, there's already rules in place about this. There are already standards from people much more thoughtful than the Wisconsin legislature about these subjects. The WIAA, for example, requires transgender female athletes to have undergone testosterone suppression therapy for a year before participating on a female team in a WIAA-sanctioned sport. In other words, there's nobody, literally nobody, changing their gender so they can win a trophy on a sports team. That if you are transgender and want to take part in sports, what they're really looking at is the levels of testosterone going one way or the other. Transgender male athletes who have started hormone therapy are eligible only for male teams if they're taking that hormone therapy. Transgender males who have not started hormone therapy can still play on female teams. The WIAA policy is modeled after the NCAA requirements for transgender athletes. Again, there are people who are already working on this to help everyone feel inclusive, to feel welcomed, to not feel like a freak or a monster or a cheat. And yet in state after state after state, and now Wisconsin is the most recent one, Republican legislators have nothing better to do, they think, than to appeal to their base and punch down on young people. if nothing else, for their so-called Christian concern, they could have maybe read the letter that was submitted by more than 27 churches and religious organizations and more than 120 pastors opposed to those bills, talking about affirming the dignity and worth of the LGBTQ community and to oppose dangerous legislation that causes harm to members of the community, the letter goes on to say. And we'll post the whole thing at upnorthnewswi.com. Mark from Prairie du Sac, I see you're calling in. I'm sorry that I ran out of time because we are going to be talking to Kia Vakil coming up next. So we'll see if we can get to you in a later segment here along the way as we continue on this Friday the 13th on Up North News Radio. We'll be right back. It is 6:33 on this Friday morning, but I will also tell you in the interest of fair disclosure that it is sometime earlier than that, as we record a quick conversation with Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Vakil, because he's out on the West Coast and has done nothing to deserve a 4:30 wake-up call from us. Kia, how are you?
I am well, Pat. I'm grateful for not having a 4:30 wake-up call. my 6 a.m. wake-ups are already quite rough.
Yes, so you definitely deserve that and much more, because even from your West Coast perch, you keep a very close eye on things happening in the nation's capital. And I offer up the disclaimer only to say that Republicans in the House of Representatives could surprise us and actually, you know, coalesce around a candidate to be the next Speaker of the House. But we feel confident enough recording this that that's not likely, because at last report, Steve Scalise, who has quite a lot of support amongst the House Republicans, still doesn't have enough votes to actually win, because Kia, that Republican caucus, or I guess they refer to themselves as a conference, that Republican conference is divided, I don't know, in maybe five different factions.
Yeah, I mean, it's an absolute clown show. And I feel confident saying that we could record for next week and they probably still wouldn't have the way things are going.
Well, I shouldn't laugh. I mean, there's some serious matters out there, but they do not appear serious when they can't govern themselves, much less the country.
No. And this is the natural endpoint of where this party has been headed for the last 30 some odd years, you know, really starting with the Newt Gingrich era, but arguably earlier, there were seeds of it earlier. It's a party that, you know, has really intense conflict among itself. They prize, you know, really far right extremist, you know, appearances. Conservative media really has incentivized people to gum up the works and not actually govern, but to, you know, throw a wrench in the gears of governing to become conservative stars in the media. And so that's why you have people like Matt Gaetz and Nancy Mace and Andy Biggs and all these people who have no coherent, you know, in some cases, no coherent ideology. And in other cases, their ideology is just wanting to wreck the government completely. Mm-hmm. And so that is not conducive to governing in any way, especially at a time where there are multiple crises happening, both internationally and domestically. There are real consequences, but in it for this, you know, just absolute disaster of a party in the House.
I have to go off on a little tangent here on Nancy Mace, because there are I've been familiar with certain members for many years. I was aware of Steve Scalise many, many years ago, even long before he was shot and wounded in a shooting in Washington, D.C. during a congressional softball practice. And yet he remains opposed to gun safety measures. I've been familiar with Jim Jordan for the horrific reasons that associate him with the wrestling program at Ohio State University and some of the others. Nancy Mace is relatively newer, you know, in my mind. And so I was doing some reading because I saw a picture of her walking through the Capitol yesterday, and she had on a blazer and a t-shirt with a big, big letter A across her chest. And she was speaking very cryptically about having to wear a scarlet letter for things that she said. And it became pretty apparent that she does not really know what the book, The Scarlet Letter, was about, or she wouldn't have done that.
No, and Nancy Mace has tried to, with some success, unfortunately, create this narrative for herself as independent minded, someone who buck her party on certain issues, you know, like contraception or abortion, while not actually bucking her party in meaningful ways. And then she, you know, she backed Kevin McCarthy in January, but now she voted against him, which is her prerogative. You know, I would vote against Kevin McCarthy as well. But then she, you know, it's she's one of these people who seems every decision seems to be made in mind with how it benefits Nancy Mace in the world of conservative media, not so much how it benefits her constituents in South Carolina. And that may be, you know, a harsh reading of her, but what have they delivered in the last 9 months for anybody, let alone the people in South Carolina? I can't look to a single thing. They have forced, you know, tried to pass horrible government budgets. They have created a mess in the House. We are headed towards another government shutdown in just over a month, unless things change. So yeah, Nancy Mace is not that different from Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise in the sense that what she's interested in is not actually delivering results.
And yet, like you said, because of that appearance of moderation, I bring up her name to get the listeners familiar with her, because it would be one of those things where, again, you wake up one day and they go, oh, she's the consensus choice. And it would be about as Machiavellian as it gets. And to your point about what the 118th Congress has accomplished, I would refer to a post made by Illinois Congressman Sean Casten, who reminds us that the 117th Congress, under Democratic leadership, with the same margin, same slim margin in the House of Representatives, delivered the biggest infrastructure bill ever, the biggest climate bill ever, slashed drug costs, massive money to onshore manufacturing, and funds to recover from the COVID downturn faster than any other developed nation. And again, all with the same margin.
Yeah. And let's be clear, obviously, you know, Democrats had a trifecta. Right now it's divided government. But Republicans can't even pass conservative messaging bills. Right. They can't even pass a bill that they know will never become law because they can't agree amongst themselves of how far to go in making it extreme, or how harsh we should target LGBTQ people, or whether women should have access to abortion. Like, they cannot agree amongst themselves on virtually anything. And so when you can't do that, why should people vote for you? We have House elections in just over a year. If I'm a voter who, you know, only really pays attention once in a while and then maybe tunes in the last few months before an election, as many people do, as I used to do, frankly, before I started working in news, you know, if all I'm seeing is that this party can't get their, you know, expletive together, why would I vote for them again?
Well, and especially when you consider that they have again kicked the can in terms of a federal budget, in terms of the spending on so many important things, and not the least of which now, because of recent events, is whether there will be aid to Israel. Then there's the matter of, will the aid to Ukraine be tied up somehow with the aid to Israel? Will it be an either or will people compromise on that? There's relief to be had out there for disaster assistance. There's talk about relief to Taiwan. So even beyond the regular budget, they can't even really take care of the emergencies that are breaking out around us right now.
No, there's no consensus in that party, and there are emergencies. Everything you mentioned, obviously the farm bill has to be renegotiated. Yes. You know, that's a huge deal for places like Wisconsin. It boggles the mind because in an ideal world, you know, most people should be able to live their day-to-day lives when government's working, you shouldn't really notice it at all. When it's not working is when you notice it. And it's very clearly not working right now under the Republicans in the House.
In my mind, and this is just off on a tangent a little bit here, but I won't be the first person to say that this is a real indictment of the two-party system in this way. If that Republican conference were to actually break up into a couple of different factions, then one or two of those factions would work with Democrats or a group of Democrats and basically cobble together a governing coalition the way it's done in so many other Western democracies. So there's at least a government of people who are interested in and able to get enough of a majority to govern But I mean, it's not like five Republicans are going to vote for Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries as speaker. But again, in other countries, you would actually see something like that to keep the ball rolling of governing a country.
Yeah, I mean, that is a huge problem with the two-party system and the current media ecosystem in this country, because the right-wing media sphere is just has gone so far off the rails that any, you know, conservative or any Republican who, you know, is willing to work with Democrats, you know, gets ostracized.
They're a rhino, right?
You see the response to Mitt Romney over the last few years, to John McCain at the end of his life, the way he got treated by the right. It's just, and these are not liberals or even moderates, you know, in the real sense of the word. These are conservatives who just are, you know, somewhat rational and unwilling to play the game that conservative media has forced Republicans in the House to play, which is if you compromise, you're a rhino. If you keep the government open, you lose your job. It's the incentives are just perverse.
Well, you mentioned irrational, and that takes us to Donald Trump, who, again, like everything else in the right wing right now, you have to play to the right. You have to see how far you can go. You have to be outrageous. Donald Trump is now, you know, dropping expletives in all of his speeches, using, you know, the coarsest of language, which would be one thing. It's just that the stuff that he's saying, if it came out of the mouth of Joe Biden or any pretty much anybody else, we'd be talking about whether they have the mental faculties to be running for, much less serve as president. And it sure feels like Trump is getting a free pass simply because he's always said weird things, but now they're weird and borderline incoherent.
Yeah, and they're increasingly violent. I mean, we have, you know, just over the last few weeks, he's called for the execution of America's top general. He made fun of Nancy Pelosi's husband for nearly dying in an assault by a Trump supporter. He said migrants are poisoning the blood of our country, which is genocidal rhetoric any way you cut it. He's targeted the judges and the prosecutors involved in his investigations. When we know that when he, you know, targets people like that by name, his followers often threaten them, often show up outside their homes armed, often leave horrifying voicemails. And that's just a handful of things. There are so many, you know, increasingly dangerous, reckless, violent things he said. And it's sort of just some of the media covers it, a lot of it doesn't. And it's that there's a danger in that because, you know, he's been out of office for a few years. There's a danger in people not realizing who this man is and how much more extreme he would be in a second term.
Okay. That's, I don't want to end on such a heavy note here, Kia. Let's change to somebody doing something good. We mentioned it briefly earlier in the week, but tell us about the Biden administration taking another wave at corporations that are charging junk fees. What are they doing that would be new?
Yeah. So basically, you know, anytime you try to book a concert ticket or a Packers ticket or, you know, whatever through Ticketmaster, StubHub, a hotel stay, inevitably at checkout, you see a convenience fee or a service charge or a whatever name they give it. Those are junk fees. They're surprise charges that aren't there when you initially look at the price, and they're deceptive. They cost people money. People hate them. Everyone hates them. They're basically the financial equivalent of spam to your phone or to your inbox. And so the Biden administration has proposed a rule outlawing junk fees across industries. So what that would mean is that companies would have to give you the full price up front so that, you know, if something says it costs $50, it costs $50. It doesn't cost $61.29 because of a convenience fee.
That's real world stuff. That's stuff that we deal with at our kitchen table all the time. You know, not some of the ridiculousness that we've had to unfortunately be exposed to this week. Yeah. At least somebody is looking out for us. Kia Vakil, thank you so much. Appreciate the time. Hope you have a good start to the weekend.
Thank you. You too, Pat.
We didn't, obviously, when we recorded that late yesterday, the House Republicans were still meeting. And since that time, Steve Scalise, who, again, had by far majority support among fellow Republicans, dropped out of the race and threw everything right back into chaos because it was clear to him that there were approximately 8 Republicans that were not going to vote for him, no matter what. What they were holding out for, remains unclear in some cases. These are people who either just want chaos, they want promises of a government shutdown, or they want promises of such draconian cuts that would be suicidal to the Republican Party writ large. But these are ideologues that come from safe, gerrymandered districts, or from parts of the country where they would actually get primaried from the right if they weren't that extreme. It's an unfortunate state of affairs that we're in, but that is where you find the House Republicans on this Friday the 13th. Back with today's history lesson and music break next. You're up north. Got some very big names on the birthday list, like Paul Simon. Paul Simon turns 82 years old today as we welcome you to today's history lesson and music break. It's October 13th. On October 13th, 1269, the present church building at Westminster Abbey was consecrated. The United States Navy was established by the Continental Congress on this day in 1775. The cornerstone of the White House was laid on this day in 1792. And the first modern World Series was completed on this day in 1903. The first World Series champion, the Boston Red Sox, defeating the Pittsburgh Pirates in the eighth game of the series. I believe there was a tie in one of those games. Happy birthday to Sammy Hagar. He is 76, so it's been a long time since he's been 55. I know I'm going to be saying that later today, trying to find my way through Chicago traffic, begging to be able to do 55 again. Born on this day in 1872, Sam, did you know that L.L. Bean was a real person?
I did not.
Leon Wood Bean, a hunter, businessman, and author. He founded L.L. Bean. Leon Wood Bean. Who does that to their kid? Leon Wood Bean.
Some kind of sick joke or something, I guess.
I know. It's like you're like Patrick Kreitlow, something like that. He passed away in 1967, born on this day in 1872. Chicago fans recognize the name Robert Lamb. He turns 79 today, the original songwriter and keyboardist for Chicago, who was not born in Chicago, by the way. He was born in Brooklyn. Marie Osmond turns 63 years old today. Actor Sacha Baron Cohen is 52. The number one song on this day in 1984 was from Stevie Wonder. I just called to say I love you. I just called to say how much I care. It wasn't just the number one song on the Hot 100 chart. It was on top of the Adult Contemporary chart, the R&B chart, and the singles chart in the United Kingdom, and all of it off the soundtrack to the movie The Woman in Red. I'm not sure that I ever saw that movie, but everybody heard the song. Let's see, the number one song this day in 1979 was from Michael Jackson. Got one more birthday for you. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the New York City congresswoman, is 34 years old today. On this day in 2016, Bob Dylan was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature, quote, for having created new poetic expressions within the great American song tradition. Previous winners of the Nobel Prize in Literature had included John Steinbeck and William Faulkner. He was the first American to win the prize since Toni Morrison in 1993. And get set to do your little hand dance here. 5 months after marrying Jay-Z on this day in 2008, Beyoncé releases the sassy Single Ladies, Put a Ring on It. Song would eventually, of course, go to number one, hold the number one spot for 4 weeks, and won the Grammy for 2008 Song of the Year. There's your little music break and history lesson for this October 13th, 2023. In our next hour, by the way, we're going to talk to Mark Jacob back to the dysfunction of trying to elect a House Speaker, and we've titled the episode, Boy Math Can't Get to 217. And if you're not following, you know, internet memes and other hot topics, then you might miss the whole point of boy math. But it appears that we guys have trouble making things add up. And that is on display no place more so than what you're seeing in Congress right now. Back to the legislature, I mentioned this a little bit earlier in the hour, at least hinted at it. Here are the details on some actual good news from the standpoint of those who want to see renovations at American Family Field and have the Milwaukee Brewers extend their lease there. Republican legislators announced yesterday they have a new version of a plan to fund repairs at the ballpark. That clears the way for the state assembly to take a vote on it next week. The State Affairs Committee approved the changes yesterday, and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said the full assembly will vote next week, Tuesday. Republicans claim that the bill, with its income taxes on Brewers players and employees, would cover the state's expenditures and that residents would not face any new taxes. The state's contribution stays the same at $411 million. The plan also assumes the Brewers will stick to their commitment to put up $100 million. The city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County would each contribute about $67 million from now through the year 2050. Their total combined contribution adds up to $135 million, though Milwaukee city and county leaders argue that the cash-strapped city and county can't afford such sizable contributions. But it is a plan that's on paper that has broad agreement, and through a spokesperson, Governor Tony Evers called the proposal a compromise that ensures the Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball remain in Wisconsin for future generations. So when this comes up for a vote next week, again, it will be one of those issues you don't see a lot in politics, but it is one that is decidedly nonpartisan. You will see Democrats speaking out for it and against it, Republicans speaking out for it and against it. It comes down instead to questions of state support, of taxpayer support for projects like this. Should the team be putting up more? Should the team be putting up everything? Is this just about multimillionaire sports owners, or is this about economic development for a community? It's something that every community has had to go through. If this bill goes through as is, or with, you know, minor changes maybe in the state Senate, but regardless, if this gets done in basically a matter of just a couple few months since this really first came to public attention, it will be a sign that something functional is happening in Wisconsin and in the Milwaukee area compared to so many other communities in other states that have years-long debates about what to do, whether to hold on to a major league sports franchise or risk losing them the way that Oakland, California has been losing their football and now their baseball team. So if this comes together, again, not everybody's going to be in favor of it, but it would be a nice, rare, welcome sign of stability amongst the lawmakers across the country on what to do about their major league sports franchises. All right, Mark Jacob, Dan Schumacher, and much more coming up in the second hour of Up North News Radio right after this break.